770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey, listen, glad you're back with us. Going to bring on somebody here as a friend of the show, somebody who we appreciate the stances he's been taking a lot lately. Attorney General Steve Marshall is the 48th Attorney General for the state of Alabama, appointed in 2017 by then Governor Bentley. Has served the state quite well, was actually recognized by the Alabama Policy Institute a couple of years ago as a policy warrior, somebody who stands up for conservative values in his position. And he is joining with other attorney generals around the nation in pushing back on the vaccine mandates that have been announced by the Biden administration. Mr. Attorney General, thank you for calling into Right Side Radio. We're glad to have you on again today.
Thank you, Phil. Good to be with you.
Thank you. Well, listen, Reuters, I'm looking at a report right here. I mentioned it right before you came on with us that says that the Department of Labor's OSHA has just submitted, as of yesterday afternoon, the draft of the proposed rule on how they're going to enforce the vaccine mandates. I saw where you also came out with your own press release dealing with vaccine mandates and also questioning whether the legislature could do more in its next session to deal with the topic. Give us an update from your perspective. Where do we see this going right now?
Yeah, I guess start with the first, and that's the opportunity that the Biden administration is attempting to take advantage of with the emergency rule from OSHA to try to impose a vaccine mandate on employers that have more than 100 employees, which for a variety of reasons is unlawful. But the thing that we've been waiting on, and not only have you seen all 26 Republican attorneys general speak to the fact that there would be litigation, but you've also seen governors in this case, including Governor Ivey, be very vocal on that front as well. But the way that process works now that OSHA has delivered yesterday, in fact, we saw it last night for the first time, the draft rule, it goes to an administrative arm of the executive branch called ORIRA. That's a wonderful acronym, but they have to review it, and then at some point in time, that rule will be published with an effective date. It's once it has gone through that process, in which I think you will see Alabama and others be very proactive in attempting to get a stay of that particular rule. You know, we now are in the process of reviewing what it is that we have an opportunity to see, but it is only until it actually goes through that final step in the process. In essence, that's kind of when the cake is finally baked, will we have a chance to be able to move forward. It's still, that's only one of four prongs that the Biden administration has pushed. You know, if you recall, there's two executive orders right now, one involving federal employees, another involving federal contractors, and then we still have not seen their final effort to deal with compelling entities to require vaccinations of employees if they receive Medicaid and Medicare funding. So there's still more to be done there. And then on the other front, we really thought with the legislature coming back in to be able to deal with redistricting, and they'll be here anyway, that we've been asked generally what are some things that the legislature can do. And so yesterday we put out not only a little bit of guidance about kind of where we are with regard to the Biden mandates, but a couple of things that could be helpful. Number one, and it goes back a little to the discussion that we had before about the vaccine passport law, that there really is not a defined enforcement mechanism. And so it gives the legislature an opportunity to do it, whether they, you know, vest responsibility of that enforcement on our office like they do, for example, with the monument bill, or do they give the opportunity for a private litigant to seek injunctive relief to be able to stop a policy from going into effect. And the other thing that they could do is to be able to craft on any private employer that would require mandates of their employees, because there is no prohibition on that specifically, to be able to say, let's make sure that if you're doing that, that there is still the opportunity to be able to claim either a medical or a religious exemption from that requirement.
Yeah, and I think those are all huge. I guess, Attorney General, one of the questions that I have is, have you spoken to House or Senate leadership in Alabama yet about the possibilities of legislation like this? Because I do agree with both of those. I think they're extremely necessary. And that's been part of the frustrating aspect of the Senate bill that was passed this past session and became the act that we call the vaccine passport ban. But yet, you're right, it has no teeth in it, and it needs to be bolstered. And then I totally agree with your call for them to also allow legislation that, or to move legislation that literally says these exemptions should apply. And so have you had discussions with them about doing this yet?
Now, we've had discussions with individual legislators and have given them some draft language, waiting to see whether or not, I think, if they can convince the governor to be able to put that in the call that will be coming up for redistricting. I do not know kind of what the plan is for that session. That's obviously a decision that the governor has to be able to make before the call is issued. But my hope would be that there is at least enough support that folks can understand that if, in fact, they are going to have to be here for a couple of weeks for a redistricting session, that this is at least an area of importance enough that they can go ahead and try to address that as well. We think both of these provisions make an awful lot of sense, should be able to develop consensus, and we hope that leadership can develop some support from their bodies to be able to move on this. Because, I mean, Phil, I think you hear it on your radio program. Hear it when I'm walking on the streets. This is the topic of discussion that people want to stop me about and share, is what they have seen is remarkable overreach from the Biden administration, and then a failure to recognize kind of the reality on the street about where we are with vaccine mandates.
It's been an incredible tone deaf situation from the federal side, as if the economy didn't have enough going on to knock it down. It appears that they are willing to go ahead and allow people to lose their livelihoods left and right, potentially, merely because they made a conscious decision or they were denied a religious exemption or something like that. And Mr. Attorney General, I completely agree. And we're seeing, by the way, I've got a couple of news stories here. Not only your press release, but I pulled a couple of others. One, New Hampshire is taking some bold steps. The New Hampshire Attorney General, John Formella, just recently issued an opinion for his governor, Governor Sununu, who is also one of the Republican governors who's pushing back, and saying that literally the federal grants that are being given to the state cannot be limited in any way by future directives on COVID-19 response. And so we're seeing attorney generals pushing back, not just in litigation, but actually in terms of advising their governors and doing other things, as well as being very vocal like you've been. And so we're looking at potential legislation or litigation at the national level. Are y'all going to band together for one suit, you think? Or are you going to be like a bunch of different lawsuits kind of wearing out the issues from different angles?
You know, the interesting thing about, particularly on the OSHA side, is that even if there are multiple cases that are filed, regardless of the ruling that comes at the district court level, it's almost similar to an MDL. I know you and I know what we're talking about there, but just sort of for your listeners, that if there's, and I use the opioid litigation, there's lots of opioid cases that were filed around the country, and the way that courts try to deal with efficiencies when there's similar allegations against similar defendants is to consolidate those into kind of one case with one judge kind of hearing those. And we would see a very similar action take place here, is that the appeals of those cases, regardless of whether it was 2, 4, or 10, would all ultimately be consolidated into one particular circuit. And so I think there's clearly discussion's been going on strategy-wise. I think we probably want to continue to sort of keep that to ourselves right now. But the reality is that whether it is 4 cases, 10 cases, or 1, there will be very much a solidarity among Republican states to be able to very much push back on what's coming. And I think it's clear we're going to prevail. I've said this from the very beginning, that this effort by the Biden administration, they know clearly that this was political theater and wasn't the opportunity to be able to fully litigate this and prevail. It's similar to what they did with the eviction moratorium when they came back to the well again, knowing that they had already lost the case once and a president acknowledged, well, I'm going to do it anyway. I think this is exactly what's going on here. Unprincipled decisions, contrary to the rule of law, attempting to placate those on the left without a compelling government reason to do so. Feel very confident in what we'll be able to do, and I think that clearly we'll be able to stop this moving forward. May not be at the initial district court level, depending on the judge that it's been given, but I think we'll ultimately prevail.
Well, and I agree with that completely, and I do think political theater is a perfect and very apt description of what we saw take place. The fact, though, that they're willing to play with people's lives and emotions like that just for the purposes of political theater is somewhat disheartening, but I look forward to the fight.
Well, I think it's an intimidation factor as well, Phil.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I mean, let's use the school board example right now, where, you know, somehow or another the Department of Justice trying to weaponize other agencies to stifle free speech. I think what you saw by the Biden administration doing this is hopefully coercing private entities to be able to act consistent with what they would eventually propound without ever actually having to do a rule to be able to enforce it. And what I think you've identified in a tough labor market right now, what I continue to hear from many employers is they are very concerned about their ability to maintain a workforce to be able to fulfill their own mission. And the reality is the Biden administration, which has already seen record-setting gross and inflation when I pumped gas the other day, now more than $3 a gallon, that this is going to make it even more difficult on our economy and what we're attempting to accomplish.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Attorney General, we got a couple minutes for the next break, and I want to ask you, though, this, because I get this question often. I thought I knew the answer to it. Maybe I don't. Federal contractors are usually private employers, and they contract with the federal government. Are they currently under an existing mandate? Because my recollection was they were not, although they can be strong-armed by the government. I didn't think they were under a mandate as yet. What is your take on that, if you don't mind?
Yeah, there's two executive orders in place now, one involving federal employees. The other was issued, I believe, on September 9th, involving contractors as well. Now, there is a effective date for that, which I believe is maybe the second week in December. And that potential case raises kind of its own unique concerns. But I can tell you that there are many in Alabama that are evaluating kind of what their response would be to this executive order. And we likewise continue to look to see whether or not litigation is filed. I can guarantee you that Alabama would weigh in support of contractors in the event that's challenged.
Well, and I appreciate that. And on behalf of many in this listening audience, because we do have the Huntsville area, a lot of the Redstone contractors and defense industry are basically circling the wagons, looking at what they have to do right now. And it's quite the topic of water cooler conversation, if you know what I mean.
I can believe it.
Attorney General, we've got a short break we got to take right now. Can I get you to hang on? I'd like to talk to you about sentencing reform just for a minute before we hit the top of the hour. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, sir. We're on with Attorney General Steve Marshall, our 48th Attorney General here in the state of Alabama, who is going to just now next dissect another topic, one that we covered down on a little bit last week. You remember the prison bills that were passed? Well, on top of that, they also passed some sentencing reform. And then we also saw one of our men in blue killed, not because of that particular bill, but at least because of the weak mindset of allowing people out early. We'll talk about that with him when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN and live online at rightsideradio.org, where you can click listen live, and no matter where you is, there we is. Phil Williams here hosting Right Side Radio, where we like to say we are indeed solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey folks, we got our Attorney General Steve Marshall on the line with us. I want to go right back to the phone and thank you for your time and for holding on during the break, Mr. Attorney General. We got about 4 minutes here, if you don't mind. I'd love your thoughts on the recent developments in sentencing reform in the most recent special session of the legislature. A bill was passed that I took issue with. I had Representative Connie Rowe on the show, and she's a former law enforcement officer. She takes issue with it. And then you also had your own press release on the matter. I'd like to get your thoughts about the general sentiments of letting people out earlier and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the question, Phil, is, as you well know, the history of reform in Alabama really began when you were in the Senate trying to address what we deal with nonviolent offenders. We reduced our prison population, provided additional services to help integrate people that were nonviolent offenders back to become productive members of society. But the reality is that as a result of the work that y'all did, our prison population is now a little over 80% violent offenders. And my question generally is, what is it we're attempting to reform at this point, knowing that a violent offender in prison is not going to do harm to anybody in the general public? And so when we saw in the last legislative session an effort to release violent offenders a year early, knowing number one, particularly if they receive good time credit for sentences less than 15 years. Alabama has the third most liberal policy in the country relating to good time, so that somebody's sentence could almost be reduced by 72%. And that doesn't even include when they may get out for parole. We just felt like that's not the direction that we need to go, particularly in light of the fact that in our country right now, we're seeing the highest murder rates that this country has ever seen as far as percentage increase. We see violent crime all across our country. We've been dealing with that in the state of Alabama. That my sense ought to be that while we're addressing prisons generally, I think the construction project is worthwhile because that's necessary for us to be able to take some facilities offline and do the things that ultimately courts are going to look to us to do. But I don't believe it means that we got to let violent offenders on the street early. And if they wanted to be able to do the supervision, which I think is not a bad thing, let's do it like the federal government does with inmates coming out of federal prison. Let's do that on the back end of their sentence, not take a year off and allow them to go early.
Well, and I completely agree with that. And I know that you spent many years before you took the office of Attorney General and as a prosecutor, someone who actually prosecutes criminals. And Connie Rowe herself was a law enforcement officer. She and those two communities of the prosecutors and those who actually do the arresting on the street, is disheartening to see someone, especially a violent offender, get that much time off. And it impacted my listening area quite a bit when we had the recent death of an officer in another shot in Sheffield, and by someone who was not because of that particular bill per se, but because of that sentiment at the very least, was released for good time, and literally of a 10-year sentence for murdering his father, he pled to manslaughter, got a 10-year sentence, and got out in three, and then committed murders, one of which was a law enforcement officer just most recently.
Yeah, and he killed another person as well. You know,
exactly.
And when we talk about violence on our streets, we had three law enforcement officers shot within less than a 24-hour period, and unfortunately, Sergeant Reisner didn't live. And one of the things that I do on behalf of the people of Alabama is to make sure that I visit with those families. And one thing that I told that family is that we'll get to the bottom of what happened.
Well, we appreciate you, Attorney General Steve Marshall. Thank you for being on the show today, and thank you for your stance on vaccines and on other federal overreaches. We know you've been in the fray, and we appreciate your time today.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk soon.
All right, talk soon. Hey, folks, that was our Attorney General Steve Marshall. And listen, that goes into the broader discussion of what I've been saying, is your state government should be your firewall against federal overreach. Absolutely should be. Now, that's an example of how it can be. Attorney General Steve Marshall is joining with, I think he said, 26 other Republican attorney generals around the nation as they plan and prepare for the day that this vaccine mandate is actually published. Because keep in mind, most of the mandate right now is nothing more than a press conference. There is no true rule. But the actual draft of the rule has now been sent from OSHA, Department of Labor, to the White House for approval. And they're working through the details of it and making sure all the grammar and the syntax is correct, I guess. And then they're gonna issue it, knowing full well it's going to immediately be enjoined and it's going to go to court. And it could wind up becoming a Supreme Court issue. And they know that. But like he said, they don't seem to care. Their intent right now appears to be moving forward with a level of intimidation that puts people into a box and makes them do what they want to do under threat of penalty. Penalties may not ever happen, but they're going to threaten it nonetheless. And that's what your attorney general is fighting back against. And that's what your state legislature should be fighting back against. If you are listening to me and you are a member of the state house or state senate, I have walked in your shoes before. I know you can do this stuff. Special session coming. I hope you're heeding the words of the attorney general and strengthening our position against vaccine mandates and the ability to avoid vaccine passports. We need that. And our state legislature and our governor are the only ones who can truly make that happen in advance, as opposed to leaving it to the Attorney General to fight after the fact. All right, folks, more where that came from. We're going to have our State Senator Del Marsh come on the show, talk about education in Alabama when we get back from this. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. We'll be right back.